AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. An international police team has called off a visit to the Malaysian Airlines crash site in eastern Ukraine because of security concerns. Alexander Hug is part of a European monitoring group in Ukraine.
We will not risk our unarmed civilian observer mission to deploy to a site where we can't control the risk to a degree where we are confident that we have it at the level where it is acceptable. We therefore have decided to stay back. We reassess the situation continuously.
The plan is for the joint force made up of Dutch, Australian, and Malaysian police officers to eventually provide security at the site where 298 passengers and crew were killed when the jetliner was shot down by a surface-to-air missile. In Gaza, Hamas says it's observing a 24-hour ceasefire ahead of Eid, the holiday marking the end of Ramadan. The Palestinian group earlier rejected an Israeli offer to extend yesterday's ceasefire. An Israeli army spokesman would not say if the military will hold off its attacks, adding that troops, however, will continue the effort to destroy Hamas tunnels. Friends, family, and fellow church members gathered at a Philadelphia street corner where three children were killed by an out-of-control SUV that had been carjacked on Friday.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine.
Dedicated, they were hard workers, they were playful. They were kind.
That tape from KYW-TV. The three children were with their mother and a neighbor selling fruit to raise money for their church. The mother remains in critical condition. The carjackers have yet to be caught. One of Liberia's best-known doctors has died of Ebola. Dr. Samuel Brisbane is the second doctor known to have been killed by the disease in Liberia. Earlier, a U.S. doctor also treating patients on Liberia had been diagnosed with Ebola. At least 672 people have been killed in that outbreak. This is AP Radio News. A wildfire burning near vineyards and homes in Northern California has more than tripled in size. State fire officials say the sand fire has now burned more than six square miles of timber, grass, along with five homes and seven outbuildings. This woman tells KXTV.
It's scary. It's really, really scary right now.
A second blaze is threatening homes in Yosemite National Park. Some big names in the game will be inducted today into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
One of the all-time star-studded classes will enter Baseball's Hall of Fame. 300-game winners and longtime teammates Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine will be enshrined, along with Frank Thomas, who combined power and a high batting average. Also going in are longtime successful managers Joe Torre, Tony La Russa, and Bobby Cox, who combined to win 9 World Series between them. A crowd of over 50,000 is expected to be on hand. David Schuster, Cooperstown, New York.
I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Runners, do you need a race slot for the Army 10-miler? Join Team Fisher House to become a champion for military families and get a guaranteed slot at this year's race. Fisher House secured a limited number of race slots exclusively for their supporters. Do more to show your support of the military than by saying thanks for your service. Take action. Join the team to make a real difference in the lives of service members, veterans, and their families when they need it during a medical crisis. Register today at teamfisherhouse.org/ATM.
When you ask most doctors why they became doctors, the answers are usually pretty simple. Something like, I want to help my fellow man, or I just want to make people feel better. It's the rare doctor that gives an answer like, I find insurance forms fascinating. I could read them all day. No, most doctors wouldn't answer that way. Certainly not Kaiser Permanente doctors. They don't want to crunch numbers or push papers or fill out forms. Why would they? They're doctors. They became doctors to practice medicine, to ease pain, to help people. So we at Kaiser Permanente are quite happy to let them do that very thing without any of the other distractions doctors have these days, which explains why so many of the finest doctors come to work for Kaiser Permanente, because they get to focus only, solely, exclusively on their patients, which is exactly how their patients like it. We're Kaiser Permanente. Our doctors want to help you live long and thrive. Join us at kp.org.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Optifor. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Cohen, with Optifor. And we have a great lineup of guests on our show today, including John Jackson, who's the CEO of Mobile Posse, Delana Knaus, and Dominique Bassler, who's the President, CEO, and SVP of MTCI. Dr. Marta Wilson, who's the founder and CEO of Transformation Systems, Inc., and finally, Bill Ridenour, the president and CEO of John Marshall Bank. First up is John Jackson, the CEO of a company called Mobile Posse. What is Mobile Posse, John?
We build a rich media push notification platform for the mobile space.
Say a little bit more about that. What does push mean?
So the notifications that you get sent to your device, they get delivered to the home screen or the lock screen. There's usually a platform behind them that determines whether the message gets sent, and we're that notification platform.
How long has the company been around?
We've been around for about 8 years.
Why start this business?
I saw a need in the marketplace. Company's changed a little bit in 8 years, but the need is essentially the same, and it's to surface messaging from applications in a rich way on the device. So basically letting consumers choose the content that they want and get it delivered to them in the most efficient means possible on a device.
How did you get the idea for the business?
I think it came from, so when I was at AOL, I worked in the mobile group for a couple years. And one of the things that I noticed was that even though our software was preloaded or loaded onto all the phones when they were manufactured, not very many people were aware that it was there. And so there needed to be something that kind of let people know, so a notification. And that realization, something that a platform that was needed in the marketplace, is what led to the founding of Mobile Posse.
Mm-hmm. What were the early days like for you? I mean, do you have a lot of experience around startups?
I've certainly been around startups.
You were telling us earlier you were in the early days of AOL. That kind of qualifies, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about that experience and how it shaped who you are today and why it qualifies you to start a business.
Yeah, it was a wonderful time in my life. It was my first real job, and I had, I don't know, something like 15 jobs in 7 years. And, you know, starting with working on the phones, being a technical producer, working on product on the business side. So I got a lifetimes of experience, not just from the roles that I had, but also the different sorts of companies that we were exposed to. So
when you got out of college and AOL was your first job, right?
It was not my first job, but I call it my first real job because I was a bellman and I waited tables. So I had some other jobs before that, but it was...
Why go to AOL, not some other company?
You know, total luck. A friend of mine who had just graduated as well, he was living on our couch, and he got a temp job at AOL, and he came home one day with this Macintosh SE and a modem, and he said, "You're not going to believe this, and I'm going to log on to this computer, and you're going to be able to talk to people." And the other roommate and I, my buddy Eric, we just looked at each other and said, "This guy's crazy. Like, what? Why would I want to do that?" But it took him like half an hour to set this thing up. And as soon as he was done, we were huddled around this 8-inch screen, you know, chatting with people across the country. And there was kind of a light bulb that was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
So you were telling us you're like employee 133 at AOL, which is the really early days. So tell us about looking back on it. You know, because of that experience, I learned these three or four things, and that really helped me start this business.
I think a true understanding, or I guess a better understanding than I had before I started at AOL, about how business works and business models. We talked a lot at AOL about really three ways to make money, you know, subscription-based business, transaction-based businesses, and advertising-based businesses. I got an MBA in 8 years, one that I got paid to get. So I think that led to that was one thing. I think acknowledge an acceptance of change and the fact that you need to try things out, and if they work, you know, stick with it, and if they don't work, push them to the side. Those were the two major things.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about how your relationship to the concept of change has evolved over time.
I think I've always been somebody who's pretty accepting of change. I grew up military family, so moved a lot. So that, you know, when you have to change your friends and you have to change your school and you have to change basically everything you do every two or three years.
The notion of change isn't new to you, but, you know, to leverage it to be a really key business principle, that's something else.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes I change a little too quickly. Mm-hmm. Maybe leave some of my coworkers behind. You know, it's a little bit of a challenge because sometimes, or oftentimes, the CEO has the best visibility, and they know I need to go this direction. And I think one of the things that I've had to do is make sure that when I felt a change was needed, that we relayed, or I relayed that well as to why, and then brought people along, because I can change pretty quickly. So bringing people along with me is an important thing that I needed to learn.
So would you say it's not so much that you're looking to make change, it's that circumstances have changed and you recognize it, and that dictates that you need to make a change, and you see that faster?
For sure. I don't desire to make change. It's not that I come into the office every day and say, what do I need to change today? I think it's more once I think I do quickly get to an acknowledgement that change needs to happen, and then I'm willing to make those decisions to essentially force that. I mean, sometimes
I think what Mark is getting to is recognizing change is one thing, not being afraid of change is another thing, and it's a thing all entirely to lead change. How do you get people to move behind you once you've decided things have to change?
I think it depends on the type of change you're looking to make. You know, if you're significantly changing your business model, obviously you want the whole organization behind you, right? That's not a decision that you can make without complete and utter buy-in. Some other smaller decisions, you know, sometimes you'll work a little bit to get a little support, and then if people aren't there, you just sometimes say, look, we're going to go this direction, you know, because I think it's the right thing to do. And, you know, if it's not the right thing, then we'll figure that out and we'll go a different direction. I think that's a lot of things with startups is, you know, sometimes you just need to go in a direction as opposed to sitting around and analyzing the possible different directions that you could go. I think that's key.
Tell us a bit about your background. You're from all over the world, apparently, being a military kid. Tell us about mom and dad and how they've shaped who you are today.
You know, my mom's a fiery Irish woman. So there was, I would say I'm a lot like her. There was definitely a desire. I wanted to be in control. So we definitely butted heads. But I think she's made me a lot of who I am. My father, who is, you know, not, he was in the military, but he's not a drill sergeant, right? Everyone thinks Army Dad is, you know, reveille. You're up at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. That wasn't the case with him. He was a very laid back guy. So I think I got from my dad. He reads almost a book a day, so he's very learned. I think from him I got I think the one true takeaway is past is prologue. He could tell you a story about practically anything, especially with regards to military history. So one thing that I got from him is, you know, look into the past to see what might happen in the future.
How about some mentors or people that have really had an impact on you in your professional life?
You know, I would say three people. Mm-hmm. In my AOL days, there was a guy named Marquette Smith. Great guy. I mean, just he was... You know, sorry. You know, when I think about him, all the great things he did for me. He was one of these people that carried himself really, really well. He always kind of knew the answer to a problem. He was kind enough to take the time to talk to you. and he was just really smart.
Yeah.
And he showed an interest. And I guess that's the other piece. So Marquette, my wife, which maybe will sound a little odd when coming to about business, but she's very diplomatic. And as I mentioned before, I'm a little rough around the edges. So she taught me a lot about a little bit of patience and certainly a lot about diplomacy. Last person is Jack Davies, who is the founder of AOL International. Just a wonderful human being. And he's a guy who can be hard on you, but he's super fair. And he has the most amazing memory. He doesn't write anything down, and he'll check it back within you like a week later and ask you, how's this going? How's this going? How's this going?
Yeah.
And it's stunning to me how great his memory is.
So what would you say the toughest thing you've ever accomplished is?
Oof. I had a desperate fear of speaking in public. Mm. And now I don't even really think about it. After 8 years.
How'd you overcome it?
You just suffered through, I think just did it. And now, like I was getting ready this morning and Maria asked me what I had on the docket and I said a radio interview and she said, what? You have a radio interview? And I'm like, she normally would talk about these things. And I'm like, well, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. What's the website address, John?
We have two. Mobileposse.com is the company itself. We have a new product in the marketplace. AppEnvoy.com is the new product.
Thanks. We've been speaking with John Jackson, who's the CEO of Mobile Posse. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's The Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, mm-hmm. and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the most out of it.
And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
Absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, my brand, I build great relationships and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
Uh-huh. And who, in your view, is the ideal client, the perfect client?
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. And what's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Cassie Self, Marketing Manager, Buchanan & Edwards. Cassie, what is Buchanan & Edwards?
We are an IT consulting firm, and we are committed to bringing innovation and efficiency to our federal clients.
And what's your role in the company?
My role in the company is leading both the internal and external marketing and communications initiatives, and really connecting our employees with our executives and our management team, but then also, relaying our messages to our customers.
And what do you like most about your job?
The people.
What is it about the people that makes them special?
Everybody at the company has a certain level of excitement and you really see their passion for helping our clients.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think your clients appreciate about the company?
I think that our clients first, they appreciate our quality. All of our employees are really committed to to helping our clients improve their business functions and bringing that level of quality.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about your work?
I would say the people again, the people that I interact with every day and the team that I work with, and being able to share our message and our solution with our clients.
That's great. Who do you think is the perfect kind of client for Buchanan Edwards?
An organization that an organization that has a lot of processes set in place that could be improved with technology, by bringing efficiency and automating a lot of stuff.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.buchanan-edwards.com.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Cassie Self, Marketing Manager at Buchanan and Edwards. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from a company called Optifor. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Cohen, with Optifor. And for this segment, we have Dr. Marta Wilson, who's the founder and CEO of a company called Transformation Systems, Inc. What is Transformation Systems, Inc., Dr. Marta Wilson?
Peter, Transformation Systems is a management consulting company. We work in the federal government space, and our folks are primarily industrial engineers and industrial psychologists. What we do is help federal leaders boost quality, speed, savings, and innovation.
I'm captivated by the notion of transformation. So tell us, why is that in your title?
Transformation is all about taking something to a place and people to a place they've never been before. And that's what I'm about. And that's what great leaders do. They help their people and their enterprise transform into being all that it can be.
And you use engineers and industrial psychologists to help government primarily do
this?
Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
Are you an industrial psychologist?
I am an industrial psychologist.
Why become an industrial psychologist?
It's a fascinating field, and what I love about industrial psychology is it brings together all of the secrets and methods of being a great leader with the technologies of building great human capital strategies. So it's all about people and helping them to perform as best as they can.
And you were telling us in the green room that the light went off for you early. How early?
Oh, my goodness. The light went off for me really early. I was telling you that when I was little, I grew up in this vibrant farming community, and we raised these beautiful heirloom fruits and vegetables and flowers. And I started to realize that when people come together and focus on something, they can produce amazing products. In that case, it was fruits, vegetables, and flowers. And today, it's about all the things that organizations do.
So you were telling us that dawned on you at around five.
About 5 years old, I started to get it.
So what does a five-year-old see when that kind of a light goes off? What were you noticing at five?
What I was noticing, and I'm sure I didn't use those words when I was five,
right,
but I was starting to see that a vibrant culture, an energized culture, and it was really things like people that were committed. There was a commitment. There were connections or relationships, and there was communication. There had to be communication in order to make things grow, and it's the same in organizations today.
So for you, it wasn't just the flowers and the vegetables, which was kind of cool all by itself.
Sure.
What fascinated you was the interaction, the human element.
The human element.
How the involvement of humans made that stuff grow.
That's right.
Is that right?
Yes, that is.
And looking back on it, you knew then it was about commitment, connection, and communication?
Yes.
Only then you didn't have the language for it.
I didn't have the language, but I was starting to sense it.
So you knew right then and there. So how did you figure out that you have to become an industrial psychologist?
Over time, as I became interested as a young girl in leadership, I read lots of historic biographies. Then I learned about psychology, and then I went to college, and I had this great professor, and he introduced me to the whole idea of industrial psychology, and that's how I got started.
So you've read a lot of leadership biographies? Is that what I just heard you say?
When I was little, yes, I did.
When you were little?
Mm-hmm.
How old were you when you were reading these biographies?
I started in about third grade. I read every historical biography in the library.
What were you learning looking back on it?
you know, when you're a child and you read about someone like George Washington or Clara Barton, Red Cross, you know, just all of these different people, if you read enough, you start to piece together there are themes, and there and it comes back to, like we talked earlier.
What themes? What did you discover?
Well, it comes back to great leaders have the ability to inspire people, to bring people together, to create bonds, and to help people truly be their best. Every great leader I've ever read about or know does that.
Uh-huh. And is that the secret sauce?
It's part of it.
What's the other part?
Well, the other part of it, you'd have to read my books.
So give me the Cliff Notes version.
So, as I've written about in Leaders in Motion and Everybody's Business, my two latest books, it the secret sauce comes down to being a total systems thinker and enrolling and engaging everybody in your sphere of influence to know and grow that enterprise. And it's not about cracking the whip on people. It's about listening and communicating and building an energized culture. That's the secret sauce.
Okay. So then you decide to start a company.
I did.
Why? Why not just stay in the route that you were in and have the impact that you love to have?
I was having a great time. I was traveling all over the world. I was in a multi-university learning laboratory with all of these incredible people working internationally. One day, I said, you know what? I could run a company. I've helped all these companies all over the world. I could run a company. And I'll tell you what I did. I had a credit card, and I said, you know, I have a credit card. I'm going to take a leap of faith. And that's how I started Transformation Systems, with a leap of faith and a credit card. And look at, you know, look
so
at what's happened.
So what surprised you most about starting the business?
I didn't realize how hard I would have to work to get it all started, you know, to get all of the infrastructure in place and to basically be chief cook, you know, bottle washer, all those things.
Was there ever a moment of doubt?
I've had many moments of doubt, and you know, here's what you have to do. We all doubt. We doubt. We have fears. We have to pick ourselves up and start fresh every day and think about what we're committed to. I may have a doubt, but when I wake up in the morning, I go back to, what's my purpose? I'm about helping leaders be their best and bringing joy into this world, and that gets me re-energized.
For some folks, it's a very difficult transition to shift from the thing they love to do to leading a company that does the thing they love to do.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that transition.
For me, I had to go cold turkey. I after about a year, I was doing it all. After about a year from startup, I said, I'm going to pull back and not do the delivery anymore. And I started hiring great people who are as good or better than me at getting out there and doing the work. And it helped us to have a lot of growth for me to do that and for me to go out and tell people about the company. And that was hard. It was hard to do because I love doing the work.
Right. Give me your definition of leadership.
Leaders, effective leaders, are people who choose to inspire others to be their best, do great things, and have meaningful results.
So at 5 years old and growing up, give us a personal example, not one you read about, but of some of the best leaders you've ever seen in action.
Some of the best leaders that I've seen in action are leaders in the military, and that's who I've worked with. And I won't name names, but right, I could tell you five different admirals, men and women, that I learned from, as them as my clients, and I'm helping them, but they taught me things and showed me things about how to be a total systems thinker, how to not let any front get out in front of the other one, and to keep everything glued together to keep the organization moving forward.
Wonderful. What's the website address?
TransformationSystems.com.
TransformationSystems.com?
That's it.
We've been speaking with Dr. Marta Wilson, the founder and CEO of Transformation Systems, Inc. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. I'd like to thank Mark Cohen, my co-host, and this is Peter Schwartz. We'll be back in a minute right after this business spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrics?
Acumetrics is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
We work, our clients say that it's the three P's, our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified, and they're fun to work with. Mm-hmm. Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is, perhaps, the perfect client for you?
Businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetricsllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Isabella Fuentes, marketing director at BusinessWise CPAs. Isabella, what is BusinessWise CPAs?
BusinessWise CPA supports government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits with outsourced CFO and financial consulting services.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the marketing director.
And as the marketing director, what does that mean?
Well, I actually wear several hats. My primary role is to improve and extend the branding of BusinessWise CPA through referrals, client meetings, networking in the DC area, mm-hmm. As well as supporting current client relationships.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like the most that I don't have to be at a desk all day. I'm out and about meeting new folks and learning experiences from other entrepreneurs.
Great. What makes your organization so special in your view?
I believe our added value is that we are not just a number report kind of type firm. We're very much integrated with our clients. They rely on us for all important decisions. We help them not only with the numbers, but on the future growth of the business.
And what is it that the clients appreciate most about the company?
That they can call us and they talk to the same person every time.
Okay, and who's the perfect client?
Perfect client is small to mid-size organization looking to save on a full-time employee and as well as get the added value of the consulting.
Great. What's the website for the company?
www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, marketing director at BusinessWise CPAs. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Optifor. And this is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Cohen, who's with Optifor. And our next guests are Delana Knaus and Dominique Bosler. Delana's the president and CEO, and Dominique is the SVP. And what is MTCI, guys?
Management and Training Consultants Incorporated, MTCI, is a woman-owned small business. We're a government contracting firm, and we focus on human capital program management and training.
And when was the company founded?
It was founded in 1999.
Tell us a little bit about what human capital means.
Human capital management, from our perspective, is managing workforce, you know, doing workforce analyses for our government clients, ensuring people are in the right seats at the right time in the right place, making sure that their government agencies that we work for have the efficiencies and effectiveness that they actually need to accomplish their missions.
Right. And the company was founded 15 years ago, right?
Correct.
Who founded the company?
My late husband, Sam Knaus.
Okay. Why did he start the business?
he wanted to be able to give back to the organization that gave so much to him, and that was the military.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started this one-man training company in the basement of our home. And actually, my daughter is the one who helped him start the company when she was just an undergrad student at George Mason University.
So, Dominic, tell us a little bit about the early days.
The early days of MTCI were a little bit of a sleight of hand. We tried to act and behave much larger than we actually were. My father was the main focal point of the business. And when phone calls would come in, we literally had our office in the unfinished basement of our home in Manassas, Virginia. And cinder block walls, one desk, a telephone, a whiteboard to track training events. When the phone calls would come in, I would pick up the phone.
How old were you when this was going on?
21.
Okay, so what's it like to be 21 in an unfinished basement starting a business? And by the way, are you a business major?
No, I wasn't. I was actually a communication major.
So tell us about that. What was that like, looking back on it?
Looking back, I didn't know what I wanted to do, really. My father said he was going to start a business, and I said, okay, I'll help you. And so I went online, figured out how to get a license, and started that process, developed an HR department, not knowing anything, you know, looking at other employment handbooks and coming up with something for ourselves. We landed our first contract, and that was, you know, an experiment for me. I was running the HR and the finance department, not having any experience, but you learn from the school of hard knocks and you figure out pretty quickly what works and what doesn't work.
So what is it about you that can just jump right in and get something done?
When things need to be done, you just do it.
But not everybody can do that. What is it about you? Where is this tenacity? What is it? Tenacity, determination, persistence, natural smarts?
I think it's determination. From a very young age, I've always been challenged by my parents, my mother and my father, to be the best that I can be. And that involves doing things that you may not know, but you figure out as you go along.
Yeah. So a very sad event happens. Your husband dies. The business is left without its founder. And you guys had options, including selling the business. Why not sell the business?
You know, that's one thing that never crossed our mind, because not only, you know, we were trying to carry on Sam's legacy, continue in his dream. So that wasn't even an option back then.
Mm-hmm. And how about you?
It never crossed our mind. He put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in the business, myself included. We put a lot of investment of our time and our love and energy into the business, and we weren't going to let that experience and our tragedy affect what was going on with the business.
So, Delana, you weren't actively involved in the business at that time, so you elected to become involved in the business. Tell us about those early days.
Well, actually, I did not. Sam and I never talked about me taking over the company until the day before he passed away. As a matter of fact, I got up as sick as he was. He was at home when he passed away. The day before, he was on the computer, and I asked him, what is he doing? And he says, I'm typing your job description because I want you to know what you're going to be responsible for. And later, he made me print it off and read it word for word. But it was a shock. And at the time, I was a government employee, Department of the Army. I had been working there for 19 and a half years. So being the owner, the CEO, the top person of MTCI, was never, ever in my wildest imaginations would ever happen.
So you went from government employee to owner of an enterprise, just like that?
Yes.
Looking back on it, how did you make it work?
With this young lady sitting next to me. I could not have done it without her. She has been my inspiration.
Yeah. It was more than that, though. You had to learn a few things. You had to become something. Tell us about that.
I did. Well, the one thing that I did learn at the very beginning, which was really bothering me, and I'm so glad that I was able to learn it, was that I did not have to know everything. The key is to have the right people to be able to count on to be able to help.
Right. What did you watch your mom do that led to a successful transition?
Well, I was telling my mother just the other day, actually, that my father, she's run the business now almost half the time my father did.
Mm-hmm.
And she's taking it places that he never would have dreamed to take it. And I really do believe that we're here today because of the leadership that she's brought into the company. It's a very different style. And when she came on board, because of how wonderful she is as a human being, people see that right away. She's very transparent in that aspect. And so people are willing to listen to her, and she had a story to tell. And it was very inspiring for me to watch her come into a very scary situation, but take it on knowing that I was going to be there with her. She wasn't going to be doing it alone, but also to take on the very tough job of being the head of the company in the face of the company.
So did it ever cross your mind that you should have been the head of the company?
I didn't want that. I was very happy. I'm still very happy running the operations, making sure that the company is a well-oiled machine. But she's very good at being out front, being in the public eye, doing things such as this radio show that I'm not necessarily as comfortable doing. So our relationship is actually perfect. We're, you know, yin and yang when it comes to the business.
So, I mean, if that isn't tough enough, this just general partnership deal with family, that's complicated. How do you guys keep it healthy?
Well, I think the bottom line is the love that we have for each other. And that's one thing that we will never let compromise. The company will never let that compromise. But she, you know, at the end of the day, no matter how we may have disagreed about something, Mama, do you want to come home? You want to go to dinner? Or do you want to come over for dinner? And so that's, we keep that perspective on, we're family.
So the answer to that question is always yes. And so what do we have to do during the day to make sure that's a yes at the end of the day?
Well, no matter how much we may disagree about business decisions, we respect each other, and we really appreciate what we each have to contribute to the business. And so, like my mother said, she's my mother. I love her. I'm her daughter. She loves me. And that's the most important aspect.
Where are you from, Delina?
Texas.
Tell us about what part of Texas or what part of growing up kind of shaped who you are today and helped you lead this company.
Well, I'm originally from Waco, Texas, but I consider Killeen, Texas, my home, right outside of Fort Hood. Mm-hmm. I grew up there, and I was the youngest of seven, and really growing up, I had to really make it for myself. As a matter of fact, just being determined to make it. I am the only one in my family who went to college and the only one who completed a master's degree. So that right there has been inspirational for me. And it's taking something that may be difficult, but I continue on.
And you attribute that to the fact that you were the youngest?
Well, I think I was just determined to make the best of whatever I can.
We've asked that question a lot on the show, and then we hear responses like, well, if you wanted something to eat when you're the youngest, you had to fight for it. So
true.
Is that kind of true for you?
That is true. That is true.
What about you, Dominique? What, looking back on it in your younger years, kind of shaped who you are today?
Well, I was the firstborn, so there's a lot of pressure put on a lot of the firstborn children of the family, especially when you have parents who are as motivated and dynamic as mine were. Failure was not an option. Not going to college was not an option. It wasn't if you like to go to college, it's when you go to college, and
right.
when you study this and when you do this, then you're going to do this. So I'm not sure I actually thought very independently up until I got to college. It wasn't until I got through college and that we started running the business that I realized how important that foundation was for me.
Great. Real quick, what inspires you most about your daughter?
Her determination to continue on. If she doesn't know something, she's going to find it out. And she is multitasking. You know, she's wonderful at that.
And how about you, Dominique? What inspires you most about your mom?
Her willingness to take on a challenge in spite of how fearful or how scary the situation may be. She takes it and embraces it and does a wonderful job.
Great. What's the website address?
www.mtci.us.
Great. We've been speaking with Delina Canales, the president and CEO of MTCI, along with her daughter, Dominique Bosler, who's the SVP. I'd like to thank my co-host, Mark Cohen, with Opti4 for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn & Burnett, a law firm. Mark, welcome. What is Cohn & Burnett?
We are a law firm that focuses on trusts and estates. So we do wills, trusts, powers of attorney, estate planning, and estate administration.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the founder and the senior partner.
So what does it mean to be a senior partner?
Well, it means that in our case, I'm the thought leader, the visionary, the one who tries to figure out where we're headed. I'm not the managing partner who runs the day-to-day operations.
Okay, and what makes Conan Burnett so special?
We are, first of all, focused on taking care of our clients and just on their estate planning and administration. And I think we're one of the first firms in the area to introduce a fixed fee for doing estate planning.
Interesting. And what do they really appreciate about you and the company, your clients, that is?
You know, the clients tell me that they just love the experience. They are very comfortable and confident that their needs are being met here, and they enjoy working with us.
Hmm. And who or what is your perfect client, if you will?
Our perfect client is anybody who cares about what's going to happen to them when they can no longer take care of themselves or their family.
Mm-hmm. And what is it you actually enjoy most about the work?
You know, talking to the clients, that's the part. I could turn over all of the work to other attorneys here, but I hold on to the first part, which is meeting the clients, talking to them, getting to know them, getting to understand where they're, what they need and what they're looking for.
That's great. What's the website for Conan Burnett?
CohenAndBurnett.com, all spelled out, the A and D in between there.
Thank you, Mark. We've been speaking with Mark Cohn, founder of Conan Burnett. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, managing partner of Conan Burnett PC. Wes, what is Conan Burnett PC?
Burnett PC is a law firm that specializes in integrating legal, tax, and financial advice to help our clients.
And what do clients appreciate most about Conan Burnett?
The integration of the advice so that the client gets the best possible legal, tax, and financial result.
So, who is your perfect client? What do they need?
The perfect client is someone who's intelligent and caring and wants the best possible legal, tax, and financial advice that they can get.
And why do you enjoy your work?
Because I love my clients, and they know that I appreciate them, and I'm trying to do the best by them.
So, how many people work here?
We have a total of 10 people working here for the firm, not counting part-timers.
And why do they like to work for you?
Because they know that they're doing what's best for the client, and they enjoy the satisfaction of doing well by the clients.
And what's the company's web address?
www.cohenandburnett.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Opta4. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Cohen, who's with Opta4. And for this segment, we have Bill Ridenour, who is the president and chief CAO of John Marshall Bank. Tell us a little bit about John Marshall Bank, Bill.
Well, John Marshall Bank started in 2006. We're based in Reston. So we are a locally owned and operated community bank that focuses in the business community. We're a full-service bank in the sense that we can provide any products and services you need, but we feel like our niche is to be dealing with small businesses.
Why? And you were part of the founding team of this bank, is that correct?
That's correct.
Why start a bank?
Well, we had a group of us had worked for a previous bank, James Monroe, that was sold to PNC, and we were under non-compete contracts, and when those expired, we were thinking that we probably should get a group together and maybe do it one more time. The part that appealed to me was the fact that for the first time in my career, I had the opportunity to go out and handpick bankers that I'd known over the years and bring them into the management team of our bank and just put together the group that we wanted.
So that's an interesting statement. You've been at this for 40 years, and you have an opportunity to handpick the dream team in your definition,
that's,
right?
That's correct.
What's a dream team of bankers look like to you? How would you define that?
Well, it's people that like to have fun, have a lot of experience, and have contacts in the community, have deep roots in the community, so that not only can we do a good job serving the community and growing the bank, but we also enjoy, you know, being around each other and having fun.
It's so interesting to me that you didn't mention anything about financial wherewithal or anything in that definition of what the ideal banker is.
Right. That's correct. We went out and we used that group that we put together to go out and network with the people that they knew, and that's how we raised the capital to start the bank.
So what is banking? Is banking a relationship business or a finance business?
We think it's both. Obviously, if you're in the banking business, you have to understand finance. But for the most part, we think that what makes us different is that we do have relationships with our customers. We look at ourselves as their partners. So when they are thinking about expanding, they'll come to us and we'll sit down and we'll mutually talk about, you know, the pros and cons of that transaction and what the risks are and how to best structure the financing and how to make that work for the benefit of everybody.
So you're telling us that the bank really got started around 2008.
Correct.
Which was a precipitous time to start a business.
That's right.
How tough were the early days?
Well, you know, interestingly, when we first went out and raised the $22 million in capital from local investors and you know, the money was in the bank and we were getting ready to open our doors, we thought, oh, my goodness, the economy is going off a cliff.
Holy
what a mistake this was. In hindsight, it turned out to be a perfect time because what happened at that time was a lot of the big banks were dealing with a lot of loan issues, a lot of loan problems, and they mm-hmm. pulled back out of the market and we were sitting there with a perfect opportunity to go in and deal with those customers that were credit worthy and needed financing that they weren't getting from the other banks.
How do you know you have the ideal client sitting across the table from you?
It's really based on, like I said, I've been in the business for 40 years. You know, we'll sit down and we'll meet with a customer. We are pretty good because of the amount of time we spend in the business meeting with those customers and understanding, you know, what their strengths and weaknesses are, what their risks are, and we'll sit down and if we're all on the same wavelength, then it's a good relationship.
Bill, take us back to your youth and help us understand why you decided to go into banking in the first place.
Well, I grew up in Pittsburgh in a working class family. I was the first person in my family to go to college. I at the time I really wasn't much interested in going to college, but my father, you know, was pushing me to get an education before I, you know, went off and did anything else. And after I got to school, I ended up taking some economic classes that I found very interesting to me, and that's sort of what got me moving in the direction of a business career. Because I felt that economics was sort of a juxtaposition of sociology, finance, accounting, and all of those factors. And, in economics, you know, my feeling was that if you're going to have a career that relates to economics, you either have to get a PhD and become an academician or go into the business community, and typically that's a banking career. When I first got out of school, the economy in Pittsburgh was pretty slow. It was related to the steel industry. So one of my friends and I, we got in a car and we drove to Virginia, and because we had heard the economy was pretty good in the Washington region. And
Got a job in banking, and the rest is history?
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell us about how working class Pittsburgh, the environment you grew up with, shaped who you are today as a banker.
Well, I think the work ethic in the Pittsburgh area is very strong. It basically generates sort of a philosophy where you really want to work hard at what you're doing. The thing that I always found interesting was once I got into the banking industry, all of the different people that you meet and the entrepreneurs and the explanation of what makes their business strong and grow, that's always been fascinating to me. So it's always been something that was a driver for me to keep working with customers and establishing those relationships.
So you've been at it for 40 years. What's the most fun part of your job?
I think actually right now I'm having the most fun I've had. I've been the CEO of several other banks in the past that I've grown and sold, but this is the first bank that I've really actually started from scratch and had the opportunity to bring, you know, people in that I've known over the years. And so we're working hard. We're being very successful. We were named the second fastest growing bank in the nation last year. But we're also having a lot of fun.
Great.
So speaking of a lot of fun, I mean, most people think of bankers as pretty steadfast, ordinary, plain, almost boring people. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about motorcycles and skeet shooting.
Well, when I was in college, as I said, I grew up in a working-class family, didn't have a lot of money, so I couldn't afford a car. So I ended up getting a motorcycle as my transportation, and that established a foundation of a love and an enthusiasm for that sport. So I've been doing that my whole life as a recreation. And
skeet shooting?
And skeet shooting. I was at a bank in Alexandria, and one of my customers was an organization that helped abuse children. And they came in one day and said, we're doing a fundraiser, and we're going to do skeet shooting, and would like you to buy a foursome and bring some people out and help us raise money. At the time, I didn't even know what skeet shooting was. I had never even touched a shotgun before. But I said, it's a good cause, and you're a customer, so I'll give it a try. And we went out and had a great time doing it, and it just developed over the years, and now it's one of the recreations that I love to do.
Real quickly, before we wrap up, across the years, what's your proudest moment?
I would have to say my proudest moment is my family and my three sons.
Sure.
That's pretty much it.
That's a good answer.
Mm-hmm.
What's the website address, Ben?
It's www.johnmarshallbank.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Bill Ridenour, who's the president and CAO of John Marshall Bank. I'd like to thank Mark Cohen with Optifor for helping me structure the interviews today, and we've had a great show. First up was John Jackson, who's the CEO of Mobile Posse. Second was Delana Canalsi and Dominique Bosler, who's the president, CEO, and SVP of a company called MTCI. Third, we had Dr. Marta Wilson, the founder and CEO of Transformation Systems, Inc., and finally, Bill Ridenour, the president and CEO of John Marshall Bank. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more information about our executive leaders. If you'd like to hear this show again, you can hear it at businesstalkradio.net. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
It's 6:42 PM. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Summer is a time for high dives, ball games, and barbecues. But some hospital patients don't get a summer holiday from needing blood. Join WTOP, ABC7, and the American Red Cross for our Summer of Hope Blood Drive, Friday, August 8th, from 9:30 a.m. until 3:30 p.m. at the Tanger Outlets at National Harbor. All presenting donors will receive a coupon for a free medium iced coffee and a donut from Dunkin' Donuts. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS to make an appointment, or visit WTOP.com, search Blood Drive. On Tuesday, October 7, Cornerstone Montgomery will host its inaugural golf outing at the Members Club at Four Streams. This tournament will be sold out, so don't wait. Join sponsors WTOP, Bethesda Magazine, Lurch Early and Brewer, Ridgewells, and more as we raise money and awareness to support those living with mental health disorders. For more information, visit CornerstoneMontgomery.org or call 240-355-5718 to support Cornerstone Montgomery on Tuesday, October 7.
Join WTOP and celebrate summer with the Washington Animal Rescue League's Hot Dogs and Cool Cats Adoption Event. Saturday, August 16th from noon until 5 p.m. More than 100 rescued dogs, puppies, cats, and kittens that need forever homes will be available for adoption at discounted fees. They've been spayed or neutered, microchipped, and are ready to be part of your family. Help save lives at the Washington Animal Rescue League's adoption event, Saturday, August 16th from noon to 5 p.m. Visit WARL.org for more info.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and Federal News Radio.
This paid commercial